Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Hey, welcome everybody to the Julie Sav Show, and tonight I am joined by Byron Lacey, who is described as a civil servant, a musician, an artist, a poet, and an author of a book called Chosen, Chronicles of an Alien Abductee. Now, this is a subject that's fascinated me for a very long time. I've never had the opportunity to speak to somebody as informed as Byron, who has experienced abduction himself. So welcome, Byron, to the show.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good. I'm really good. It is 10:30 here in the UK. And as our listeners will know, we pre-record the show and get it out. So the time difference is very noticeable from here to yourselves. So have you had a good week?
Yes, I had a very good week.
What's the best thing that's happened to you this week, Byron?
Well, this week I had an interview on Friday night, which worked out very good. It was very high energy. Saturday morning, I woke up and found a bruise on the top of my knee, above my knee, which showed me that I'd been visited. It was a round bruise because I hadn't bumped into anything, especially there. It would have been right on my kneecap. So other than that, talking to people on Facebook and things of that nature, that's pretty much what my week has been so far.
Fantastic. So just socializing with people, you know, touching base with people, and then obviously that visitation at the weekend. So
yes,
I
talk with a lot of new abductees or that have just discovered they're abducted, and I try and help them cope with it and not be afraid.
Okay, so I'm really interested in that. So it'd be really good to come back to that. And of course, you've already mentioned being having a visitation over the previous weekend. So just for the purposes of our listeners, you have had extreme experiences in terms of alien abduction. So talk us through your earliest recollection, Byron, of any, I suppose, understanding or knowledge of, in inverted commas, aliens.
My first experience happened in 1955, and I was 5 years old. It played out over a period of 3 nights, as far as I was allowed to remember. The first night, my mom took me to the bedroom, put me in bed, turned out the light, and locked out the door, and the door was still slightly open. There was a light from the hallway coming in. I turned around to lay down, and there are three little guys, about 4 foot tall, standing near the foot of my bed on the side. And I didn't know what they were. I didn't know how they got in my room. And I yelled for Mama, and she came in, and they were gone. They were gone the minute she touched the door when she walked in.
What do they look like, Byron? What do they look like? You said little guys. What do they look like?
Well, they had large heads and big black eyes. And basically, I could see them from the neck up. And one of them was really strange, and his features kept changing. And part of the time, he looked like a rag doll. Then part of the time, he looked like the others. So I think they were messing with my mind a little bit. But the next night, the same thing happened. And then the night after that, the same thing happened. But Mom sat down on the bed, and she put her hand on my head, and she said, "Son, you're just going to have to deal with them alone, because they're not going to be here when I come in the room. So don't call me anymore."
Wow.
So I didn't. She left the room.
Do you think that was about a mother saying, "Look, come on," and the night terrors and things, and she didn't really understand? Or do you think that was a knowing, and she knew what was going on?
Now I think she knew what was going on. And there were a lot of other things as time went by that there were things my parents did that made no sense at the time, but now they make sense.
Right.
Anyway, she walked out of the room, and they were back, and there was also this tall guy who was about 7 feet tall, and I could not see his face, but he looked a lot like the pirate Captain Hook from the 1953 movie by Disney, Peter Pan.
Right.
And he danced around the room, and at one point it seemed that the room was a lot bigger than it usually was, and my bed somehow was slowly going around in a circle as he was dancing around the room. And he had a big wide hat and a vest, a puffy shirt. He danced really strangely, a lot of right angles in the way his limbs and things moved. Then all of a sudden I felt like I was tied down. And I do remember I looked at my hands and I wasn't tied, but I couldn't move. Then all of a sudden, I could move, and they were all gone. And I put my head under the blankets and went to sleep. And I slept like that for years because I didn't know what they were. I couldn't call my parents, and I just didn't want to see them anymore because they were so confusing. They weren't mean or anything like that I know of, but it was really a confusing situation.
How did you cope with it? How do you think that impacted upon your early years?
I think I really don't know. I've tried to imagine that. It seems like I just took it in stride and went on and didn't worry about it. And not talking about it, I do know I've always had this memory, but it became separated from my life story, and it was just sort of a weird myth that I had in my head. So. And then in 2009 is when I discovered what was going on. I had many strange things that happened over my life, and I've told friends about them, and they thought that God was looking after me, guardian angels were looking after me, or spirit guides were looking after me, and I started studying metaphysics, and well, I thought that these weird things were spirit guides and guardian angels. In 2009,
right.
I found out I was wrong.
How did you know?
Well, in 2009, I'd been back here in Nacogdoches for about a year, well, 2 years actually, and I had a friend who was really interested in UFOs and stuff, and I really didn't pay much attention to any of it. I figured there were UFOs, I knew I had seen a couple, but I just didn't think about aliens. I actually had, even though I was a big science fiction buff, I had an aversion to worrying about aliens for some reason. Hmm. So in 2009, I was in town, I had dinner, I was driving home, it was during the summer and it was still white, and I stopped at a stoplight in front of one of Walmart here in Nacogdoches on the biggest highway that goes through this town. And I was sitting there looking at the light, waiting for it to change on this four-lane highway, when a Stargate, like in the movie Stargate with Kurt Russell, except no frame around it, started. It was the size of a dinner plate, and it appeared at the end of the stoplight, about a foot from it, and it expanded into 6 feet across. And it was like whirling water or energy or plasma. I didn't know what it was. The first thing I did was I looked around at the other cars, because there were cars all around me, and nobody was paying it any attention. They were just going on with their lives. Then I closed my eyes, and it disappeared. I opened my eyes, and it was there. I didn't see it when I closed my eyes.
Yeah.
So I moved my head, and it stayed exactly where it was. What I was trying to do was establish was if it was in my head or not. Well, at that point, it exploded without any sound, but it exploded outward, and all these droplets of this substance, probably plasma, headed towards the ground, but about 3 foot from the ground, they just disappeared, and it was all gone. The light changed, and everybody moved on. I told my friend about this situation, and he didn't say anything. And that sort of bothered me, because I usually have to comment about everything. But since he didn't say anything at all, I thought I began to doubt my sanity just a little bit for a day. Then a week later, on the exact same day, probably not exactly at that time, but close, because I had finished eating dinner in town, I found myself stopped at that same stoplight, and the exact same thing happened. The portal appeared. It got bigger. Nobody noticed it. I did all the tests with my eyes once again. Sure enough, it seemed to be an object external from me, and it exploded again. And then the light changed and everybody drove on. The next day, I went to his house and told him about it. And he was sitting there like he was thinking. And I said, well, what do you think this is? And he said, well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you're an alien abductee. And I told him he was crazy.
Mm.
He turned around to his computer and he wrote down two or three websites. He gave me the paper and he said, you need to look at these when you get home. I said, okay. So I went home, folded up the piece of paper and tossed it on the desk next to my computer, and I went and watched TV. About a day later, I went to see him. We'd walk for our health. We'd walk 3 miles a day. And he asked me if I'd looked at any of the websites, and I said, no, I've been busy. He said, well, you really need to look at them. And I said, oh, I will when I get time. That went on for a couple of different days. And then I finally sat down at the computer and opened up one of the websites, because I knew he wasn't going to leave me alone.
Hmm.
And I was beginning to be curious. And sure enough, there was like 50 questions about whether to determine if you might be abducted. And 95% of them, I answered yes. Then I looked at another website. I looked at things about PTSD. By the time I got through looking around for about an hour, I came to the conclusion that I probably was an alien abductee. So that was my first, that was the first time that thought ever crossed my mind. There are some other things that happened shortly after that.
That's an amazing start to life, isn't it?
Yes.
And one of the things that I've read about abductees is they have commonalities in that obviously they're human, and that either their mother, father, or both were abductees. There seems to be a pattern of family traits. Is that why you said that you feel that your mum probably knew?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One reason is, after I found out in 2009 and some other things happened, I went to a Dreamland Festival by Whitley Strieber and met a medium there named Marla Fries, who was the technical advisor for the TV show Medium. And she told me how my father had died. She told me a lot of things that there was no way for her to know.
Yeah.
And so I said, does he know about the aliens? And she asked him mentally, and she said back, and she said, he says, I know everything. And when she said that, I knew for sure that she was in contact with my father. So anyway, he told her that we had been abducted, that I was the fourth generation. My great-grandfather, who came from Ireland in the 1800s and to Texas in 1850, and then his son and his son and my father and me. That's five. I got it wrong. Great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, and me, the four of us.
That's
yeah.
A huge history.
Yes. And but there were two events. Well, let's just say there's one key event that made me know that there was something that happened when I was around 11 years old that confused me. And later I figured out what was going on. Actually, it was 9 years old. I was getting ready to go to bed, The song, Does Your Chewing Gum Lose Its Flavor on the Bedpost Overnight, had become one of the top hits in America at that time. So that's the date that this particular event happened, even though I don't have it on the top of my mind right now. And I like that song, but one night I went to bed and it started playing in my head and it would not stop. And I had never had anything like that before. So the next morning I told my mom I hadn't slept at all and I couldn't go to school. Well, she seemed very disturbed. She took me in and put me on the sofa, gave me a soft drink and said to watch TV and do not go to sleep. I want you to sleep tonight. And then she left and went into the dining room, and I couldn't hear what she was saying because of the TV, but I could see that she made a phone call. 5 o'clock that evening when my dad got home, I was still laying on the sofa watching TV, and he walks in, he just walks right by me, gets my mother and takes her into the dining room. They have some kind of conversation. Then he walks back into the living room and she stays in the dining room. He walks in and he sits down on the sofa beside me. He said, son, if you don't straighten up, we're going to have to take you to a psychiatrist. I'm going, wow. And I didn't say that loud, but in my mind, during this whole thing, it occurred to me that I could not confide anything that happened to me ever again to my parents. Because, in a sense, they were a threat to me. And in that time, it was a very bad thing to have to go to a psychiatrist. It was a very bad thing to get a divorce. You know, it was a totally different time.
Yeah.
Then he told me that a long time ago, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, one of my relatives, a female, had told people that she talked to little men in her room, that they appeared out of nowhere and she talked to them, and they ended up putting her in an insane asylum where she eventually died. And he said, you don't want that happening to you. And what was so confusing about it was I wasn't even thinking of the little guys from when I was 5 years old. And I didn't think about them. I never put those two things together. He gave me that same talk about the relative several different times because I wanted to be a writer, I wanted to be an artist, things like that. And he said, you don't want people to know who you are. You don't want to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would tell me that story about her again, and he'd say, we don't talk about ourselves. I don't even know anything about my parents except what happened when I was with them. So that was all confusing to me.
Yeah.
And in 2009, when I started looking over everything that had happened to me, those two incidences, the three incidences, started really crystallizing, and I knew what was going on then. They knew about the aliens. They had been abducted.
Yeah.
They didn't want me to talk about them. But here I am. Oh,
it's just a massive thing for you to have to go through and not be able to speak to anybody. And if you do, you have that risk that somebody's going to, take you to a psychiatrist and have all that stigma, et cetera. And especially, as you're saying, in that time, it was a completely different situation than it is now. That's much more of an acceptable thing to do, to go and get support and help for whatever is needed. So over the years, has the abductions become more common? Do you remember anything about them?
Well, okay, first off, I will just say I remember three events distinctly. They did not make me forget them. I saw them, 1955 being the first one, 2009 another one, and then 2015,
right.
My favorite. But anyway, I had weird things happen to me. Like I've had my life saved eight times by strange occurrences, such as when I was in Henderson County Junior College, I was 20 years old, I was in the band, and we were at a pep rally, and the pep rally was almost over, and it was for homecoming. We had a cannon that we always sat off, fired at the end of the pep rally. So everybody's standing around talking, and I'm talking to this guy that I hardly know, and my back is to the cannon. And a complete stranger that I had never seen before, ever, taps me on the shoulder, and I turn and face him, which puts the guy I was talking to my right and slightly behind me. And I'm looking at this guy, and I go, in my mind, I'm going, I don't even know who you are. Why are you talking to me? So I'm going to brush you off really quick and talk to this person I know. While I'm thinking those things, the cannon explodes, and I see out of the corner of my eye that the guy I was just talking to crumples to the ground. And then there's a huge crowd of people all around him, and I notice there's dust coming out of some of the buildings.
Mm.
And I turn back to look at that guy, and he's gone, and I never saw him again. The guys working the cannon had put a double load of powder in it because it was homecoming, and they had put a double wadding in it, and the back of the cannon had blown up, and it had sent shrapnel into two of the buildings, knocking bricks out of them, and one piece had gone into the pelvic area of the guy I had been talking to. And if that other stranger had not tapped on my shoulder, I would have caught that piece of shrapnel at the base of my spine and been paralyzed at the least, or dead. So whoever he was, he saved my life. And the man, the boy that got hit, he was in the hospital for 8 months because it did so much damage inside of him. You can imagine a baseball-sized, sharp piece of iron going into your body, and it was jagged and everything. So that's just one instance where everybody said it was a spirit guide or God, those things. And I thought maybe, too, although I wondered why God would be wasting his time with me and kill the other guy or hurt the other guy instead. But I would tell people these things, and I had no explanation for why that happened. In 2009, I sort of quit telling anybody anything because I knew where they were from.
Yeah. So those experiences, you know, the experiences you're describing are good and bad. There's been a protective factor as well as, I suppose, quite an intrusive factor. So tell us about some of the not so positive aspects.
Well, basically the...
What happens when you're abducted?
Well, the three times that I've been abducted now, I've seen them, it has been a positive thing, in a sense. Now, the thing that causes me the most trouble and has all my life, but I haven't known it, I believe I'm abducted by or visited by one group and then abducted by another. And they harvest neurotransmitters out of my brain.
Right.
And I will sometimes find a bump on the top or the side of my head, and it will have a needle hole in it. And I can remember finding these little scabs on my head as a child, wondering where they were from and how I had a hole in my head. And
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It will make me feel really horrible. Like, it's like a super hangover. And even the cat wanting to be petted is stressful. And my first inclination is just to stay in bed. One day, I had given up drinking diet soft drinks. And this thing had happened, and I didn't know what it was. You know, I didn't know it was them doing this. I just felt terrible, and I thought, well, I'm just going to drink a soft drink. Maybe that'll make me feel better. And it did, which was strange. So I went and looked up the substances in colas, and the only thing in them that would have any kind of psychoactive properties was phosphoric acid. Because it causes your choline levels to balance out. And, of course, we have a lot of choline in our brains.
Yeah.
Well, they almost used phosphoric acid as an antidote for nerve gas in World War I and World War II. But they didn't. They found something else. So I went and bought a bottle of choline, and the next time this thing happened, I took choline and felt a lot better. Then I met a man on Facebook who calls himself Mark Scratch, and he has posters of marks and scratches and things, and he specifically one day put one up talking about neurotransmitters, and they take several different neurotransmitters from us, the ones that do this. So I went and got amino acids that replace all of those. And the next time it happened, I took all of those, about 1,000 milligrams of L-phenylalanine, tyrosine, different things that replace neurotransmitters, and felt much better, even better than with the choline, which I took along with it. So I've gotten where I can manage that situation pretty good. But it feels like depression. I failed to mention this. One day when it happened, I felt so depressed, but it's an odd depression. And I decided, I've been thinking, anytime we feel depressed or anything, we try to run from it. We try to get rid of it as fast as we can. Some people turn to drugs. There are, you know, all kinds of things you can do. I'll go to the doctor. Well, I laid down and I just surrendered to it. And it sort of opened up, and I could tell it wasn't depression. It was something missing from my brain.
But how do you know that, though? Because, I mean, I'm listening to you now, and your story is absolutely fascinating, the journey you've been on. But how do you identify that neurotransmitters are being taken from your brain and you need to take a substance to put them back? I mean, some people who are critical would just say, well, actually, you're feeling depressed and you're just wanting to find that pleasure fix. So you're taking something to replace that. Does that make sense? I don't mean it disrespectfully, but that would be.
I understand what you're saying, except every time it happens, there's a needle puncture in my head, and usually a bump if they have to drive it in hard, I would imagine. Then there's the information I got from Mark Scratch about the same thing. Then there's the fact that those chemicals, those amino acids, they replace those neurotransmitters, and when I take them, I feel better. Now, I've tried to use those when I had depression after my father died. They didn't work at all, and I didn't even know about the neurotransmitters being robbed at that time. I just knew that sometimes they will elevate your mood, but they didn't help with that kind of a thing at all.
And I fully respect that, and I think that if you were to be critical of what you're saying and you'd want to challenge it, you would say, well, actually, you know, that pleasure center, that adrenaline, for example, that people experience when people want to enhance it or when they're feeling quite flat, they'll do something to ensure that chemical is then released into the brain to feel that way again. So then they may take a drug, for example. And, have you ever had that medically checked, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Well, I've taken antidepressants couple of different times.
Okay.
Once when my father died, once when I had a nervous breakdown when I was in college.
Okay, so what you're saying is that, you know, you've experienced those things, so you know the difference.
Yes. And this isn't the same. It feels like depression, but when you relax and analyze it, it's more like a strain inside the mechanism of the brain. Trying to work, but something missing, so it can't do its job.
So people, when they're abducted, how do you know you've been? You mentioned a bruise that you saw on your just above your knee at the weekend. How do you generally know that you've been, apart from this bump on your head, which you know, and feeling of depression? Is there anything else that would identify to you that you'd had a visitation?
Well, there have been several different events because I've asked them to abduct me. One day I spent a lot of time telling me, the next time you abduct me, I want to know. And I said that to them all day, or thought it to them.
Hmm.
And in the middle of the night, it was about 3:30 in the morning, I woke up. And I looked up, and now I should have been laying on my back. I looked up, because the light of the stereo, I have a little stereo that has a light that stays on all the time, even when it's off, a little red light. It was in the wrong place. It should have been above me, and it was below me. Then I realized I was on my hands and knees crawling into the bed. Now, and waking up was not like normally waking up. It was like a fade from black in a movie. I had no sense of waking up. I was already wide awake. My body was already warm. I lost my balance and fell over. And I noticed, I always sleep with a pillow over my head. I noticed that my pillows were there in place with the top one raised up like somebody had been under it, and that somebody was me.
How would I know if somebody that I was close to had been abducted? What would I be looking for?
Well, there's telltale marks that they leave. One is a round bruise about the size of a quarter in American money. And then they leave punctures, and they will usually leave a small trail of punctures, about 3 to 5 of them in a row. And I've actually had 21 of them in 3 rows of 7 on my wrist one time. I've had the others 3 and 5. They'll leave those. Another thing is, you might wake up and your partner may not be in the bed, and they may not be in the house. And then you might turn around and suddenly they will be in the bed. And you won't know how they got out and how they got in. And nobody has ever been around that was awake that knew I was taken. But that does happen to some people. I had a friend that woke up and discovered that he was in the backyard.
How
and he was holding he was laying on the ground in the backyard. Now, the door was unlocked because he didn't lock the doors, but he didn't know how he got there.
How very scary for him.
Yes. It was more confusing.
But once you realize it's something you don't have a control over, that must be incredibly scary because you don't know what's going to happen next.
Yes. And that was what really hit me when I first discovered what was going on in 2009. And I have this electric line that runs through my property, which is mostly woods. And I paced back and forth telling them I wanted to know what they were doing to me. I wanted to know what they were doing. And I did that for 5 days. And I was very manic about it and did it 5 to 8 hours a day, because I didn't have any place I had to go, and I was really confused. I kept going, am I crazy? Are y'all doing something to me? I finally refined the sentence for the last 2 or 3 days to, I want to know what you're doing to me. Then I went to play guitar at this little restaurant, had about 15 people in it where I played on Friday or Saturday, and it was horrible. I started forgetting the words. I had to make them up. I made up more of the words to the songs than I sang that were the actual words. And at that point, a friend came up, a man I had not met, but he became a good friend of mine. He came up, he was a guitar player. He took the guitar and told me to get my words out of my guitar case, sing from them. He played for me and I sang, and it turned out pretty good. The last song I sang was Mr. Spaceman by the Birds.
Wow.
And my friend that had told me I was abducted was there. Later he said he thought that was sort of ironic that I sang that song, because I went home, it got to be about midnight, and I could not go to sleep. My mind was just wide awake. So I decided to meditate, I got in bed and I used a CD that entrains the brain to a meditative state. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't in my bed. I was in a hammock. And the hammock was hooked from side to side instead of end to end. And it looked like it was, I couldn't tell what it was made out of. It almost looked like parchment or leather. But when I inspected it, I was pretty sure it was not a biological material. And there were three blankets in the bottom of it in various states of disrepair. One of them looked a lot like a child's blanket and had a pattern on it, but I don't remember at the moment what that was. So anyway, I crawled out of the hammock into this dimly lit room, and I looked around. I could not tell where the light was coming from. And then I thought, I'm in a spaceship. I knew I was in a spaceship. And there were two other hammocks of the same nature hung in different parts of the room. I could not see any corners of the room, but I could not see that they were round. And then I touched my face, because everything looked foggy, and I reached up and touched my face, and I realized that I did not have my glasses on, which is the way I went to bed, without my glasses. And in dreams, I always have my glasses on.
Right.
So I heard some footsteps coming down whatever was on the other side of that door, and I just went, I don't know if I'm in the mood to meet aliens tonight. And I started trying to crawl back in the hammock.
Yeah.
Then there was a black space, and then I was laying on a metal table, and there were three little grays. Then I knew what I had seen as a child, standing down at the end of the table. And in the background, to my about even with my shoulder over to the side, but just distant where I could not see him clearly, was the weirdest thing I'd ever seen in my life, which looked a lot like a giant praying mantis wearing a robe. Now, I had never heard of the mantis creatures. The only thing I knew about were the grays, because I had been avoiding this subject matter for quite a long time. Even when my friend would show me movies about it on YouTube, I would fall asleep. And I never fall asleep during the day. So anyway, I'm on this table, and he says, "Do not be afraid." And I was getting ready to be afraid, but it was just gone. And it wasn't because he had suggested it to me logically, you know. He had somehow controlled my nervous system. Then I was in my bed, and I was looking at this, like a holographic movie, on my wall in my room. And I couldn't move in my bed, and apparently I couldn't move on the table either. Then the picture turned to black and white. And then I was looking at myself on the table, and I could not see the grays or the mantis, unfortunately. And it was me from my knees up to my neck, and I could see through my body. It was like it was X-ray. And I saw them administer the anal probe. It went up about 8 inches, a foot into my body, maybe more. And then I was wide awake. And it was weird. I felt fantastic. I knew I had been visited by the aliens. And I grabbed a piece of paper that I keep by my bed just for no particular reason, and I drew a picture of this tall creature that I'd seen. And then I went to sleep, which was strange because it usually takes me an hour to go to sleep, maybe more. I had insomnia many, many times over my life for long periods of time. So I went to sleep and I woke up in the morning, and at first I was really happy. And I went, wow, they actually let me remember. Then I burst into tears. And I'm going, and it's weird. I didn't feel happy. I didn't feel sad, but I'm laying here crying. And I got in a fetal position and I cried. I cried for over an hour. and I, there weren't thoughts driving my tears. You know, I really wasn't having any thoughts except, why am I crying? Why am I crying? Why don't I stop? And finally got myself together, and the crying stopped. Later that day, I went and told my friend the entire story. And showed him this picture, and I said, now this is weird, because I saw this, and I've never heard of this. And he turns around his computer, and he pulls up a page that he's recently viewed, and there is a child's drawing of a mantis creature that looks almost exactly like mine. So
fascinating.
It was amazing to me that I knew about something that I didn't know existed.
So who do you think this character was, the kind of praying mantis looking person? Who do you think that was?
Well, I think he was the boss of these three graves. He was the one telling him what to do, probably psychically. He was definitely controlling me. He was the one instigating it, and he was the one that had... Okay, now I just remembered something, too. His voice. When he said, do not be afraid, I'm going, I have heard that voice. And I had heard it in 1999. In another one of the strangest events that I've ever had. But I did not know it was driven by aliens when it happened. For about a month, I had been trying to find a way out of my body into the other side. I felt that there had to be a way you could die without dying. And one night, I came home, it was about 7, I decided to meditate and carry on my experiment. And just before I climb into bed, this voice goes, you are going to be given the opportunity to die. And I go, what? Now, why would I? That is the weirdest thing I've ever thought. And, of course, somehow I got really stupid there because I was trying to die, in a sense, or trying to have an NDE. Or out-of-body experience, near-death experience, NDE. And so I meditated, everything fine. The next night, the same thing happened. The next night, the same thing happened. On the fourth night, I got into bed. I started meditating. All of a sudden, I couldn't feel my breathing, and I couldn't feel my heart. I couldn't feel anything. So I forced myself to awaken just a little bit, and I could tell that my body was breathing on its own, and my heart was beating, even though it was slow. So I just sank down into this, and then everything started disappearing. And all the complexes, all the negative things in my brain, my ego, it started leaving. I felt it going away from me, but actually I think now, because of another experience, that I was leaving it. And I turned into this, there were no phosphenes in my eyes. It was complete, solid black. And I felt like I was the size of a pencil lead. And then next to me, this bright light opened up. Only it didn't affect me visually because I had no eyes. So I'm standing there and I go, wow, I think I could go into this. And I wonder what it is. Once again, I must have gotten stupid because everybody knows what the light is, but I didn't. And plus, it was a weird situation. So, but I think I can go into it. It might be my higher self. But what if I can't get out? What if I'm dead? What if I come out of this and I'm really sick? I'm 15 miles from town. I'm not going to be able to get an ambulance out here. I'm not going to go. And this voice goes, huh, you wanted this, and now that I'm going to give it to you, you're not going to go. And it sounded sort of sarcastic, actually. I can't catch the right tone of voice. Well, it laughed 3 times. On the first time, the wall of light turned into a sphere, a lot like a mirrored ball that's in a garden, only it wasn't reflecting anything. Then with the second laugh, it got smaller. With the third laugh, it disappeared, and I was wide awake. That was the same voice that talked to me in 2009, the mantis.
And do you think this, obviously this mantis has, when was the last time you saw the mantis?
Well, the last time I saw the mantis was in 2009. The beings that I saw in 2015 were totally different.
Right. Okay, so, I'm so aware of time and that we're running out of time, Byron, and you will have noticed that I've hardly asked you any questions because your story is fascinating and I am just, avidly listening to your experiences and your own journey and how you've had to make sense of what was happening to you and I'm listening in awe. But I'm really aware of time and I'm just wondering whether or not for the purpose of our listeners it'd be useful for maybe for us to meet again and have another interview because there's so many more questions we could ask of you.
Yes, that would be great. And my case has been investigated by several different people. So
how is that
too?
Yeah, that would be amazing to talk about. So, obviously people that are listening to this, they may well have had experiences that they cannot explain. They may well have heard some things that you've said that they've that's kind of sparked a trigger or a memory or something for them. And you do support people, you've said, that have also been abducted. So where can people contact you, Byron, until we speak again? How can people get hold of you?
Well, the best way would be to send me a PM on Facebook.
Right.
And I'm on Facebook as Byron Lacey. And give me a friend request or not, either one. If they message me, I always look for my messages, and I discovered the other box about 6 months ago, so I check it now, too. Because
cool.
There were some that had been there for a year that I'd never seen, but luckily they weren't important.
Oh, wow.
But so Facebook is a good place to get a hold of me.
Fantastic. I can only apologize that we can't kind of fit everything into this show in one go, but your experiences span decades. And I think that we'd really love to hear more about, obviously your coping mechanisms and some of the other investigative routes that have been taken to understand what's happened to you. So if you really, wouldn't mind coming back on the show, I'd be absolutely honoured to interview you.
I love to talk about this stuff. I've had to be quiet for so long. After 2009, I just quit talking about it because I knew everybody would think I was nuts. So this has been, talking to people about it is a very freeing and liberating experience to me.
Fantastic. Well, thank you once again, Byron, for what has been an amazing hour interview and cannot wait to talk to you again. Take care until we next speak. And obviously people will add you on Facebook and I certainly will be sending you a message. So, keep in touch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.